Good day, friends. Jonathan Darty here with another edition of the PSR Podcast. You know, we're a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries, and we exist to help individuals and families move from sexual brokenness to wholeness in Christ and equip others to do the same. In today's episode, I welcome back Gary Ingram from Love and Truth Network to discuss the challenges of parenting in a hyper-sexualized culture. We dive into the importance of modeling healthy, godly behaviors and values, and how parents can create a nurturing environment for their children. Gary shares insights from his ministry, emphasizing the need for open communication and proactive measures in addressing identity and sexuality issues. We also explore the biblical perspective on parenting, encouraging parents to embrace their role with faith and hope, fostering a supportive environment for their children's growth and identity development. To learn more about the resources that Gary offers, visit loveandtruthnetwork.com. For additional resources, visit our website at bebroken.org or check out all the links that we're going to put in today's show notes. And of course, friends, we want to ask that you rate and review the podcast after listening to help others find it. Now let's unpack today's important conversation for parents. Well, all right. We have Gary Ingram back with us on the program. So welcome back, Gary.
Thanks so much, Jonathan. Great to be here.
Yeah. So we've had you on before a couple times to talk about various aspects of sexual brokenness. We talked about when you had just released the book that is actually sitting behind you, Am I Gay?
Yes, and
we
talked about it's very subtle.
We talked about that. But before we get into our topic today, which is hopefully going to be really, really encouraging for parents as they just try to navigate a hypersexualized, identity-confused world.
Yes.
What's new? What's been going on? What are some things that you just like to share with our audience about your ministry?
Well, there's a lot happening with Love and Truth Network, as I think there are with all these ministries, including your own. One of the things we've developed are several summits that we are offering to churches and, you know, at different conferences. One is the Sexuality in the Church Summit, which is an all-day event. Another one is on Walking with Those Who Struggle, which is primarily equipping pastors, leaders, counselors, others that want to be able to help others. And then our most popular one is actually called Parenting to Thrive in a Sex-Saturated and Identity-Confused Culture. And that one is just asked for, you know, more than any other. And in that, we focus on two primary things, I'd say kind of a part B. The first two would be on prevention. And so we love getting young moms and dads, even couples who don't yet have children. We love getting them in the room to be able to talk about just ways that they can, I think, best create the soil of their family in such a way that is not foolproof. I mean, all kinds of things can happen, and we live in a sinful world with an enemy that is out to, I think, rob innocence as early as possible and destroy it. And thank God that He reclaims, can reclaim us. But so we want to equip, especially dads, though, especially young men have no idea how vital their voice is and how vital their presence is to establishing their sons and their daughters in the good of the identity God gave them as boys and girls made in His image to become men and women one day. And then the second part of that is on recovery. How do we, as moms and dads, again, develop the best opportunities possible? Again, nothing's foolproof, but how do we develop those best opportunities in which we can help our son or daughter or various children come into alignment with the purposes and plans that God has for them? And then the kind of part B is, what do you do? Like, my oldest brother is 20 years older than me. What do you do when you have siblings that are 10 years apart and 15 years apart? And one, the older ones, maybe we didn't do such a great job when we were parenting. We did the best we could of the older kids, but yet they've grown up. They're kind of off in the weeds and dealing with some real brokenness. And at the same time, we have young children that we're trying to raise up in a way that's different than the outcome of the older ones. How do we navigate that? That kind of in-between place of prevention and recovery.
Yeah, that's good. You know, before we get into, because I think a lot of times when we're going to be talking about a particular topic, you talk about parenting children and raising them in a sex-saturated, identity-confused world. And then it's real easy to immediately want to just kind of like jump to, okay, what do I do in this situation and that situation and these kind of things. I'd love to first give the 30,000 foot biblical view and understanding of what is the responsibility and the role and the privilege of parenting. Like, can we just talk first about like what is God's design for parenting and the family?
Well, and great that you asked that question, Jonathan, because actually one of the parts that I didn't include is we always start off with, how are you actually doing? So this isn't an answer directly to your question. I'm going to get there in a second. But so many times moms and dads are running around with in a crisis, emotional crisis, with what's going on with their child or their children. And they have not been building into their own spirit, their own life, the things that need to be there. They may be nominal Christians and not really terribly serious about their faith. They may be very consistent in church and yet not have a deep relationship with Jesus, and or their own relationship as husband and wife is pretty broken. So we actually start there, and then we shift into prevention and into recovery for kids. But we've got to help moms and dads understand that they can only pass on what they have. They can't just pass on to their children ideas and things that the church is teaching that they themselves are not practicing or modeling the opposite of. And so that flows right into your question. As a mom and a dad, I think one of our primary responsibilities is to model what we teach. It's actually to make sure that we're living the life that we're calling our children to live. And when we fail and we blow it, and we certainly will, that we live in a manner with our kids where we go back and tell them where we failed against them or that they saw, and we ask for their forgiveness. And we come to them with humility and with grace, and also that we're really careful. I've blown it with my kids lots of times and have had to go back and apologize and ask their forgiveness. And but one of the things I've really tried to do as a dad is when we're having a conversation and I'm trying to draw out whatever's going on in their heart. This has been true since they were 3 and 4 and 5 years old. Just inviting them to kind of share, like, what are their struggles? How's your heart doing, honey? Can you talk to me a little bit about that? And I've tried to have those conversations with them since they were very little, just even focusing on maybe 15 minutes a day with both of them. And over the course of time, that has established a lot of trust on their part toward me. And what I was starting to say earlier is I've tried very hard to, whatever they say in those moments, to not shame them, to not overreact to something that they say or share, especially as they've gotten older and have become teenagers. I want them to know that whatever they're wrestling with or whatever they're struggling with, we can work on together. But what they can't do is what so many Christians try to do, which is live a double life or live a life that is they're working out all their junk between themselves and God. And God calls us to work out our stuff in the community of believers, in a band of brothers, band of sisters, that kind of thing. And we can really pass that on to our children when we're actually modeling it and not just teaching the ideas of it.
Well, and even God's design, that design of the family is a microcosm of the larger family of church. So there's sense in which even that he's giving us, this is the model. Community is absolutely essential to life and faith. Yes. And I think sometimes it's just important for us to start from maybe one way to put it is like the positive view of things. The fact that marriage is good, family is good, children are good, parenting is a good, noble vocation that God gives to us. So quickly we run to all the places where it's like, where are all the mistakes? How am I failing? What's wrong with my kids? And, you know, sometimes sin becomes the scapegoat when maybe I'm just being irresponsible, you know, whatever. And I wanted to at least start the conversation from a place of, it is so good that you are a parent or you desire to be a parent.
Yes.
Let's not think that that's a bad, but in some ways that's part of even, could you talk even about how that in itself could be a shift in the culture of sexual brokenness and confusion if we just started saying God's design for marriage and family is good?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, we know that the scriptures teach very clearly that children are a gift from the Lord. And so it's an opportunity for we and the body of Christ and Christ followers to shine as lights in a dark world, because we live in a world now that is, I mean, it's very much kind of death culture in a lot of ways, and a devaluing and a disrespect for the nature of life and even innocent life of babies. And so to come to a place where we honor and respect life, not just babies, but you know, the moms that are pregnant that didn't want to be pregnant, for example, that we're caring for both, that we are helping dads, young dads, learn how to navigate what it means to be a father in a way, again, that's not shaming them or beating them up emotionally or tearing them down, but is really building them up. And I, with what you said, Jonathan, about the positive things, we know that just from statistical information, research, that the world views the church as being against everything. And while that's not exactly true, I don't think that's true, but I think the perception is understandable because we are so quick to speak against all the negative things. And one of the things we need to be doing with our kids, with one another in the body of Christ, is teaching, as you said, the positive aspects. Like, for example, children don't need to have sexual content introduced into their lives at early ages. We need to be, I think, protecting children from that kind of thing, but we can be pouring in the positives of what does it mean to be a boy made in God's image? What does it mean to be a girl made in God's image? The equal value of that, but the uniqueness of that, and that we bring it up more than just on occasion, but that children mm-hmm. really go into their schooling, whether that's homeschool, public school, Christian school, whatever, but they go into that life of 5, 6, 7, 8 years old with a real sense of purpose about who they are as boys and girls bearing the image of God.
Yeah. So now as we talk about the culture we're living in, I'd like for you to be able to share with us, what do you see as the challenges? And again, we're focusing mainly on the issues of sexuality. What do you see are the challenges for parents today that are the same as they were 100, 500, 1,000 years ago? And what are you seeing the challenges today that are different or unique or new?
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind with that question is, you know, I often ask people in an audience, like, how many people loved going through puberty? Would you just raise your hand? Like, it was the most joyful, fun thing ever, right? Well, nobody in their right mind is going to raise their hand. That was it's a challenging time. It's a hard time to shift from boyhood or girlhood into being a young man or a young woman. And so that has always been true, and navigating this increase of, especially for boys initially, this increase of sexual interest and desire and curiosity in a way that they weren't earlier on, and helping them with that. Those things have always been true, I'd say, but today we live, of course, in a society that is in many respects working to, not in every corner, but in many, working to sexualize children at the earliest ages possible. And it's so defiling. Like, I look back on my own history, and because of sexual abuse and early sexualization with pornography at the age of 5 or 6, I don't remember a time in my life that my mind wasn't polluted with this garbage. And so I love the opportunities that we have, even in today's culture, to protect children and to let them just enjoy the fun of being a kid and using their imagination in a way that's not warped, and being able to have fun and all that, those kinds of things, letting them be a kid for as long as possible. But again, it seems like puberty is getting younger and younger. The average exposure to pornography is always getting younger, it seems. And of course, the darker stuff too, a few clicks away on the internet. So those are the internet, certainly, and all that goes along with that, social media. Those are always new challenges. I'm often telling parents or encouraging them, please do not give your kid a smartphone. Don't give them these devices along with their, you know, along with their binky. I mean, they don't need to be sucking on a pacifier and learning how to, you know, to get along on your cell phone or other devices. We need to allow kids to be clear of those kinds of devices for as long as possible, to not get drawn into social media and a lot of the, it even impacts brain development, spending too much time on these kinds of devices.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think one of the things that I see is that the speed with which somebody can develop this compulsive behavior around yes. these types of media is vastly different than it was 100 years ago.
Oh, I mean, absolutely.
Inundated
20 years ago. Yeah.
With data bits that we can constantly be viewing. And like you said, that even there's a biological effect with that too. It changes brain development and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, as parents, because parents are listening to this and they're, you know, I'm sure they got 1,000 questions that are very specific to very, you know, their own children. I mean, isn't that the way all of us are? We're like,
yes.
Yeah. That's great. Who cares about your kids, Gary? My kids are in this situation.
Exactly.
What are the universal challenges when it comes to sexuality? You mentioned about, hey, puberty is one of these things that nobody really was thrilled about. It's always just an awkward, you know, time. Talk to the parents though, because parents already know that, right? They've gone through, they're veteran teenagers, right? They've already gone through that. But talk to them now from the parenting perspective of what does it look like to create a calm, kind of sober environment for raising kids with all of the challenges of childhood and then transition to adulthood.
I think one of the biggest things that I see that moms tend to do more naturally and women tend to do, I think, more naturally is knowing their children, sons and daughters, more easily and at a deeper level than most fathers do. Now that's, I said most, because that's not always true. But I find that many dads, Christian dads, really wrestle with the concept of shepherding the hearts of children. I grew up in a Christian home and very grateful for my parents today. They've gone home to be with the Lord. But I grew up really despising a lot of things of Christianity in my own father in many respects when I was a teenager because I didn't understand it at the time what was going on. But the behavior management and the image management was so strong. And it wasn't, my home is a dime a dozen in terms of Christian homes. We can so easily focus on behavior management. In other words, what I mean by that is it's very common to focus on behavior mm-hmm. management. It's uncommon to really work with kids, especially as dads, in shepherding their hearts. And I would say that's something that the earlier we can begin doing that, that's why I love getting connected with young dads, young moms in this parenting course or something like it, is to be able to help dads understand the vital role they have to play at the earliest of ages. When children grow up with a dad who is strong as he should be, but also affectionate and tender, that combination of those things. When they grow up with a father like that, who blesses their mom and there's a decent relationship, it's not going to be perfect, of course, but they grow up the ability to emotionally regulate in a family where mom and dad is really where they're really working as a team, and where dad is navigating and drawing out the challenging places of their own hearts over the course of months and years of time, as they move into puberty, like they're used to that. That's common. They're known by their father. They know to go to him and to mom to work out difficult matters and details. And so I think the sooner you can do that and the more consistently you can do that, not in these big, huge, ridiculous ways, like of sitting down and having the sex conversation that everybody hates and is so awkward and winds, you know, kids wind up on the counseling, you know, couch years down the road because of it. But we want this ongoing conversation that is deep but tender at the same time. And kids start to emotionally regulate better. They trust their parents more and they bring the hard things up as they need to.
Yeah, that's good. Speaking of bringing the hard things up, let's go ahead and like try to address some specific issues that parents will have to deal with when they are raising their kids in a hypersexualized culture. And the first one that I really want to talk about is talk to us about what are some practical ways that parents can address the entire issue of identity. Now, I know that's an enormous topic, mm-hmm. but it is so front of mind for so many kids, even before they hit puberty. A lot of times there's just all this confusion being thrown at them from every direction about identity. Can you tell us what identity is and how can parents, Christian parents, help their kids navigate the truth of identity within a very confused culture?
Well, yeah, I feel like I'll try to really be concise, I feel like this could be a 2-hour conversation, but what identity is, I do believe that sometimes we get hung up, even as Christian moms and dads, on a caricature of identity that is all men look this way, all women look this way. And if you deviate from that, there's something wrong with you. I think I am a firm believer that we were made male and female in the image of God. And those two are different aspects of the image of God, of equal value though, but different aspects of the image of God. And so that doesn't mean that I think men can have some more, what's culturally thought of as, or commonly thought of as maybe more effeminate characteristics. Maybe they like to cook. Maybe they're interested in art, beauty, those kinds of things, but they're still, there's still men or boys that need to be affirmed as such, not treated and coddled as if they're gay or trans or whatever. And so the more I think we understand that there can be a diversity of how we express and live out our masculinity, it is still masculinity. It should not be confused with femininity and vice versa. So I think that's important. I also think, you know, where are the tomboys these days? They're almost non-existent because they've been labeled as trans or lesbian, right? So where are the boys that again, tend more toward art and yet they still have a really strong sense of who they are as boys becoming young men? Well, again, they've been labeled in many cases. So we have to make sure that we understand the variations and the range that can be within healthy masculinity and femininity. I often say, you know, like I put on a false feminine as a once gay identified man myself. I lived into that kind of false feminine world. I was very confused about all of that. And we need to be avoiding that. Certainly, we shouldn't be affirming that as moms and dads. But we also have to be careful we're not shaming kids for natural characteristics that God has given them and actually labeling them and leading to a negative result. So so anyway, there's that piece of that. And Jonathan, I'm sorry, you asked a bigger question and I got hung up on that. Can you rephrase that or kind of direct the conversation?
Just the idea of, I think you're addressing this really, really well because, you know, I think you were honing into kind of sexual identity aspects and sometimes where we get confused there. But also just this idea of identity. I mean, we each have an identity as you are Gary, you are made in the image of God. Yeah. There's a sense. So I was wondering, because I think a lot of times parents, you can be so easily swept away by all the narratives around identity in the culture, right? That then it's just this soup of confusion of like, but where is the anchor point? Where is the sense that, maybe I'll pose the question this way. Is identity something you create or is it something that was given to you?
Yeah, a great question. I think that it is something that God has given to us clearly as male and female made in his image. That is that's our bedrock identity. Whether you're a believer or not a believer, that's still true of you. And so it's something that it's a foundation that we can stand on. But when you live in a culture that has shattered that foundation, it was already difficult to go through puberty. It was already difficult to shift from being a child, a boy or a girl, into adulthood. But now they're being told that there's no boundaries, there's no parameters, there's nothing solid on which to stand. Maybe you do feel like a girl, but if you don't, then probably you're not. And so it just creates all of this confusion and this lack of a sense of stability. We weren't made to live in boundarylessness. We were made, and nor were we made to live in a prison cell, but we were made to live within healthy, wholesome boundaries. And right now, those boundaries are just being obliterated left and right, and kids are experiencing the fallout of that. So I think it's really critical that we understand as moms and dads how to best walk alongside. I love the proverb that says, raise up your child in the way that he should go, and when he's old, he won't depart from it. That I now understand that's a principle. It's not a promise that if you do everything right in a formula, nothing bad will go wrong in this. But I think it creates the soil in which that, even if that child gets off in the weeds, they have the best soil that has been given to them in their childhood that has the greatest potential to draw them back again, as opposed to not having that soil there to begin with, but also that idea in the way that they should go. It's not the way that I think my son should go. Mm-hmm. It's the way, how did God wire you to go? And I need to, as a dad, lean into that and seek to understand where God, I'm a steward. God made them, and these are children of God, especially, I mean, once they give their lives to him. But how can I steward them in a way that gives them the best opportunity to excel?
Yeah. And unfortunately, we won't have time to unpack every single bit of that, because I know that then a lot of questions that parents will have is like, okay, but then what if my kid comes out as gay or trans, or, you know, how do I navigate that? And unfortunately, this short conversation, we're not going to be able to address all of that. Maybe we can have another conversation at some point in time to really
I know it's quick, but let me just interject this. For those parents that are in the place of recovery and feeling like, man, I blew it, God can still redeem. I mean, I was the last person that anybody would have expected to come back to genuine faith. I was a bartender at a gay club. I'd left school and church and Bible college and pursued this life and thought this is, you know, what I've been searching for my whole life. But let me just back up and say, so recovery is still possible, but if you want the best opportunity as young moms and dads to lean into this, prevention is what you need to really be paying attention to. So I have parents who say to me, how in the world do your boys, are they satisfied playing video games twice a week for 30 minutes at a time and feel like that's a privilege? Because we didn't give them 5 hours a day, you know, and endless, boundless time on television and those kinds of things. We really understood at an early age, we need to rein that in. And when they watch television, we're watching it with them as a family. And so we're watching the content, but we're also together. The earlier you practice these things in their life, the easier it is. You're not fighting with them to try to draw things back. So it's not too late if you're in a place of recovery, but the more you can lean into the prevention side, the better.
And the theme that I think is coming out in our conversation here, Gary, is there's just a bedrock of relationship.
Yes.
Between parents and kids. I'd love it if there was a formula, right? Or a pill or some kind of, but what I hear you saying is fundamental to everything we're talking about here is you've got to be connected to your kids. There's got to be a relationship there. So let's actually talk about another aspect, which is what a lot of parents are going to want to know about is things like screens and media and pornography. So what does it look like for parents who on the prevention side, but also maybe that line has already been crossed? How do they deal with that in their homes?
Well, I think on the prevention side, the more like we have Covenant Eyes that we use for, you know, for our devices, and I get a report every evening and go back and I look at that report and just check through what, you know, what's been screenshot that my boys have. Most of it is them doing schoolwork. We homeschool. Most of that is them doing schoolwork online and that kind of thing, or researching something, but different things will pop up. And on occasion it'll pop up like as a yellow, usually it's green. And I'll definitely pay attention to that. And invariably what's happened there is I see the screen and I go back and talk with my son, and it's nothing major, but I talk with him because I want him to not forget that I'm getting these things regularly and I love him and trust him, but that's why I'm looking at these things to prevent him from experiencing the garbage that I did. So it's also about sharing your own life and your own story. A lot of times parents won't share, dads won't share with their sons or their daughters what they went through. And of course it's age appropriate, but I think it's really helpful when you've struggled with something, and it's common for dads with pornography or whatever, when you've struggled with something, to talk with your kids about not the details of it, but just what a powerful and negative force it was in your life and how it was really difficult to get free, et cetera. And just let them know, this is the basis on which I'm trying to help you and walk with you in this. Now, you also mentioned, that's just one thing. Again, I just think kids need time to play and be active. They need time to imagine, and the less that their minds can be polluted with garbage, the more that their imagination is wholesome and is just fun. So be aware of who they're playing with. The challenge is being engaged, but then the other side of that is we don't want to be helicopter parents. And so every parent has to navigate this in a way that makes sense for them. But those are kind of our two bumpers, making sure that we are engaged, but also really trying to give them some freedom, especially as they've earned it, and letting them know, I trust you and I want to continue to trust you. Trust is a very expensive and important commodity to have. You don't want to spoil that too quickly. So all these kinds of conversations are really important. I think you can also help kids come back from diving into pornography or other things. The sooner you get to them, the sooner that you find out that there was an issue. But once, I've told my boys all the time, you can never unsee what you have seen. And that's one of the reasons I try to really, your mom and I really try to prevent you from seeing garbage that's going to defile you and really feed into your flesh as well.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that struck me when I was going through my own recovery from a porn and sex addiction was how in the very beginning, when God created man, we were meant to have an innocence about our mind and our hearts.
Yes.
And notice that the forbidden fruit was on a tree that was called the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Mm-hmm. We were only ever meant to know good.
Yeah.
And so there is a sense in which you talk about kind of the corrupting nature of that. And I think the sooner that parents can try to train their kids that behind every temptation is a lie.
Yes.
Like it's trying to get you to look over the fence and saying what's over that fence is going to absolutely satisfy you. And the more we can sort of reclaim that innocence and preserve that innocence, it goes so much better.
Well, and we've also had countless conversations. That's the other thing. We've had countless conversations about these different things in similar but in different ways. And the more of those conversations that you're able to have, meaningful conversations, not just as a dad speaking down to them, but dialogue back and forth, the more that it reinforces and gives them a foundation on which they understand, I don't want to go down that road. I'm getting pulled and tempted and I'm curious, but I understand what dad is saying through our conversation and dialogue that it is something that is going to be destructive.
Now, one of the things I want to ask about that, and this is, we got a few minutes left here, is I wanted to, because there's a lot of parents, that, especially when you start talking about topics like sex and even identity and all these kinds of things, it's easy to talk about like boundaries or software or, kind of how can we cage our children in certain ways and like prevent them from, but how important is it? We've been talking about relationship, right? And conversations. How important is it for parents in age-appropriate ways to share their own story of historical sexual brokenness or struggles or confusion as they are trying to raise their own kids to be those of sexual integrity?
Yeah, I think it's essential to do that. And you mentioned the right phrase, though, age appropriate. There's a series of books, I think it's four books that I think it's Stanton Jones and I think his wife wrote called, one of them is called The Story of Me. You can look it up on Amazon. We use those four books that talk about sexuality in a way that is age appropriate for kids. So those can be a resource. We didn't use all of them, but we used some of them and we used different parts of them to, and they were very helpful. There's others that are out there now too. If they're truly Christian based, Orthodox based, I think they could be a good resource. You probably know Denise Schick. She's a good friend of mine. She runs a ministry called Help for Families. She's written a number of books, even children's books, on identity and those kinds of things. So finding those kind of resources and building that into our kids, I think that's really important. But sharing our own story of brokenness with our kids and just the challenge. Like, for example, my kids knew at very early ages that God had rescued me from a train wreck of my life, of my own decisions and things done to me, and life was really pretty miserable. Well, they knew I was a train wreck, and they were dying to find out, like, well, I wonder what that was all about. But they knew enough about that, oh, that's serious. But they didn't know until about the age of 12 the specifics. And again, when I say specifics, I don't mean inordinate details, but they know my background. They know what I've been through. And now they sit in on teaching, at 15 and 13 right now. They've sat in as I've taught some different things over the last year or two. But we've protected them as well from knowing too much too early.
Yeah. And here's one thing that I discovered in my own journey. We talk a lot of times of the necessity when we're talking about somebody personally recovering, like an adult that is recovering from whatever their sexual brokenness is or addiction. And we talk about accountability. But we sometimes only talk about that in the sense of like, okay, I get a peer that is my accountability. Let me tell you, there's no kind of accountability that is the same as when your children start to know your story and you realize if I'm not on a growth mission, then I'm not modeling the right things for my kids. In other words, there's a different kind of accountability that when my children are knowing that I'm not perfect, I have a history of my own sinfulness and my own brokenness. But what I hope I'm also telling them is, I'm not done yet. The Lord is working on me. Yes. There's growth that's happening. And I think it can give your kids a real-time picture of what redemption and sanctification is meant to look like.
That's absolutely true. My boys also know that I'm involved in, you know, what I refer to as a band of brothers. I think every daughter of God, every son of God should be in a band of brothers or band of sisters, meaning men's groups, typical men's groups and women's groups and small groups. I think they're wonderful in many respects, but they almost never go deep enough to deal with the real issues that a person is wrestling with and struggling with. And so my boys know that part of my ongoing growth isn't just the accountability, but it's the relational connection as well as accountability with my band of brothers, that I'm able to be real and vulnerable. They're able to be that with me. We support one another. We're helping each other be better sons of God, husbands to our wives, and fathers to our children.
So as we wrap up here, Gary, just I want you to offer a word of encouragement and hope to maybe the parents out there that are they're breathing into a paper sack because they're yes. just feeling the weight of the responsibility, the pressure, they're feeling overwhelmed. Just what encouragement would you want to give parents?
Well, I remember, I mean, my parents were those parents breathing into a paper sack, you know, just kind of watching my life and desperate. They were people of prayer, my mom especially. And, but I believe that it's important that we gather others around us who can be praying with us, that we can be walking with, that we're not trying to walk this out with our kids in isolation without any real support. We need our own support. We need the oxygen mask that falls from, you know, if we're riding in a plane, flying in a plane, we need, if the oxygen mask comes down, we're told to put our own mask on first, then help our child or whoever's with us. We need to make sure that we're getting the spiritual nourishment, the emotional connectedness that we need while we are preparing to, you know, for the long haul to help our children. So, and even in this society, it is absolutely possible to raise well-developed and stable children who love Jesus, love their parents. I mean, my boys are teenagers. We have a great relationship. It's not perfect, but it's a great relationship. We can sow into that in ways that we don't have to feel like you know, the desperation that there's no hope. There's a lot of hope with the Lord's help and the body of Christ around us.
Yeah. It is still possible to have an existence
without
of peace,
doubt.
Rest, and joy.
Yeah. We are not that special that somehow it's so unique. No, it's available to everyone.
Yeah. Well, where can our listeners and viewers go to learn more about you and just some of the resources that you offer?
Sure. So our website is loveandtruthnetwork.com. That's simply loveandtruthnetwork.com. The and is spelled out. And then we also have a weekly podcast that we do that runs about an hour long. And that's available on all the major platforms as the Love and Truth Network podcast.
That's great. Well, Gary, we'll be sure to put all that in our show notes. And it's always a joy to be with you, my friend. And so yes. Thanks for sharing your wisdom with us today.
Thanks so much, Jonathan.
Yeah. Listeners and viewers, we are definitely going to point you to all those resources that Gary mentioned. And we're here to help you take your next best step to experiencing wholeness in Christ. So please reach out to us, and we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.